Well, hello everyone. It's the.matrix.com. I'm Justin.
And I'm Sean.
And I leaned in after you said not me. You did not lean in, then I just did. And anyways, welcome. It's episode 18, or podcast 18.
Yes.
And it's October.
It's cold.
Cold outside.
Yes, I couldn't believe it. I was okay in the morning, and then I remember walking home for lunch, because I walk home every day for lunch. And I was freezing my ass off. I was like, God damn, it's cold. And then coming home from work, it was okay. And then came in your big parka.
Yes, I last night thought, okay, I better take out my winter coat because I think it's going to be cold. And, you know, it was the right thing to wear in the morning. But, yeah, by this afternoon, it was totally too warm, and I was going in and out of stores along Commercial Drive before getting here, and it was getting really hot.
Right.
But I was sort of overcompensating because I just came back from Calgary, where I was last week, and it was 25 degrees.
Wow. 25,
29 degrees. It was really, really hot.
That's cool.
And then
it's going to snow next week, probably.
Yeah, probably. But anyways, so came back from Calgary and enjoyed the good weather. There are a lot of attractive women in Calgary, is all I have to say.
They know how to party, I understand.
Well, yeah. It's so funny. I was walking along. It's just mainly the downtown I was in. And it surprised me how well-dressed everyone is in that downtown core.
Really? Like, just out there?
Yeah, like, the women were just really sharp or... I'm just skanky getting there, but you know, but they're like really nicely dressed, like not like here. Which I mean, people get dressed up nice here, right? But we have a more, you know, casual look to us. I think.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what my sense is in out here in Vancouver. So
right.
So I just was taken aback by all the visual stimulus out there.
Yeah. Wow. Well, the last time I was there was 3 years ago. The Nine Circa played there, and. We happened to go during the Stampede.
Oh, yeah. I went by where they had the Stampede.
Yeah. And it was really cool, like, because, you know, there's girls in cowboy hats everywhere. And I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool to look at.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. So we ended up at this bar, and I was really shocked, because I think I mentioned this to you before, but Elaine wasn't with us. She stayed home, and we got this other guy filling in for her. Who did a really great job, but he's a smoker, and so when we ended up in Calgary, we thought, okay, well, we want to eat somewhere, and we wanted to go to a pub, you know, or a bar, whatever, and it was the middle of the day, beautiful sunny day, and so we had to go somewhere where they had, like, a smoking section or something. We weren't sure how the bylaws worked in Calgary compared to here.
Right.
Because you can't smoke in bars here, or restaurants or anything. So we ended up at this place that was pretty cool, but they said, oh, well, you can, we wanted the patio because he was going to smoke, and they said, well, you can't smoke out there, and we're like, what do you mean? They're like, well, you can smoke inside, but you can't smoke outside.
Really?
Yeah, because they have a smoking section inside.
Okay.
But outside, the wind will put the smoke in non-smokers' faces. And the staff, so I was like, are you for real? Like, where are we, you know? But no, it's for real. I don't know if it's across the board there, but I found that funny.
I had no idea.
Yeah. They're like, no, you have to smoke inside, okay? And our smoker bandmate was like, okay. I thought that was a little interesting. It was a fun city, I guess, yeah?
Yes. Topic one.
Under. Done.
Yeah, I know.
Oops, I leaned in, but I don't think... Because last time, I don't know, people might be noticing on podcasts that our laughing gets a little loud. So, you know, when you're tuning in late at night, you got us, you know, in your little earbuds, and, you know, you're concentrating hard and not falling asleep. You might find that we get a little loud with our laughing, so we're going to try and keep that under control.
Right, that's not going to happen.
Probably not. We can always wish.
So a lot of stuff has happened since our last podcast.
Yes.
Our last podcast was at least 3 weeks ago, was it?
It was September 11th, I believe.
Oh. Oh, gosh. It's almost been...
Yeah.
Almost over 3 weeks, I guess.
Yeah, because I was looking at it on our website, thedotmatrix.com. And I think, oh, I don't think they show a date there. But when I looked up podcasts on my computer, it looked like that we were doing, I think we talked about the fact that it was on September 11th.
Oh.
Isn't that funny? Yeah, there we are,
Yeah.
September 11th.
Wow.
Yeah, almost a
Wow.
month ago.
Gosh, so much has happened. The vice
Oh.
presidential debate has happened. We went on the town and tried to find women at in Kitsilano.
Yeah.
We you were interviewed on CBC. So let's
Yes.
start with that.
Okay, well, we were interviewed
We
because,
being.
oh, yes, of course, the Glowing Hearts, our band that Elaine and I are in with our friends Brooks and Karen, we have the name Glowing Hearts, which we've had for a couple years now, but we got all this attention all of a sudden last week because Vanok, in their infinite wisdom, decided to trademark the words "with glowing hearts" from National Anthem, which, the more I think about it, is crazier and crazier by the day. Because we were talking about, National Anthem,
Yes.
public domain,
Yep.
right? I think the guy who wrote it, or woman who wrote it, or whoever, isn't getting royalties for that still, maybe, I don't know. But it's like, if you say it, you'll be taxed or something. I don't know. So we're called Glowing Hearts. So all these people, like Province, CBC, 24 Hours Magazine, they're all like contacting us, like, "What do you think about this? They're taking your name, you know?"
And with glowing hearts is the chosen motto of the 2010 Olympic Games in
Yes.
Vancouver.
Did I forget to mention that?
Well, you started talking about Vanock trademarking it, but I wasn't
Vanok,
quite sure
yeah.
if people hadn't understood that. So the last bit of context was that every Olympic Games has a motto. The Beijing was it One World, One Dream or something like that?
Yeah.
And I don't quite understand what's Chinese about that, but
Not
anyways,
very much.
well, I guess it's,
And I would
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. Just
And
like our mascots are so Canadian, not Japanese. Anyway, but keep going.
but so this is our motto for this games for
Yeah.
2010, and so your website crashed because there was so much interest, right?
Yeah, or MySpace. Because if you Google glowing hearts, go ahead, try it at home.
We'll wait.
All of a sudden, you'll see, if you Google it, you'll see that we're number two on the list. Well, we were last week. And what happened was so many people were, looking into this, including the reporter from CBC, that, people end up on our MySpace. And apparently it crashed because it wasn't really giving accurate totals of visitors, and it was kind of resetting, and some of the songs weren't playing, and nothing would work. And I thought, oh, well, that's, it's funny how attention can come out of weird things, bizarre kind of circumstances. But, I just happened to upload some new songs we've been working on like the week before this happened. So that was really lucky. I was like, oh, perfect. Because, we've had the same songs up there forever and for the last year or so. So yeah, what do we think about it? I think, what we did when the CBC reporter came over, Bob Nixon, and we talked to him, and we mainly talked about how we weren't thrilled with Glowing Hearts being trademarked. And we just talked about that, and we understood, though, that the Olympics only have that trademark until the end of the Olympics.
Oh, okay.
And not only that, some bill passed. You didn't research this. Apparently, a bill passed, either provincially or federally, in Canada, where Vanok were given special privilege to trademark certain generic names that others wouldn't be able to.
Oh.
That's why they're allowed to trademark the words gold or metal or Vancouver or Whistler
Or the
or the. Like, they're allowed to trademark things that you and I aren't. So I found that a little bit sneaky. But I'm totally open if that's not entirely the case, but that's what we found.
Wow.
Yeah. Which is scary, because you think, okay, I don't want to be all flag waving, career protester kind of conspiracy theorist, but
Right.
I think that kind of stuff can get, if it gets out of, it can get out of control, I think. So.
Well, I wonder what the past experience has been. Like, did Salt Lake City have to, you know, did they trademark all these crazy things in the U.S. patent office or trademark office,
yeah.
you know, that would normally get, I wonder what the outcry was that, or was there any, you know, taking advantage of that special right, and was it all released after those games, or are they still sort of holding on to it because no one's noticed, or, you know, that kind of stuff,
yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah.
But, sorry, my back is easing up.
Yeah. You okay there, Justin?
I'm slouching on this chair, and I'm like, ouch.
Oh, no.
I'm okay.
We gotta get back on our comfy couch in the living room there.
Yes, that's a very nice couch you have.
Thank you.
But, my back is still crazy. I've been moving work offices today, so that's why I'm feeling old. But sorry, I digress from our topic here. But it's very interesting. Like it just rubs you the wrong way. It just rubs people the wrong way generally. That the trademark, all these different things. And I guess there are bad people out there who will take advantage. And you know, but like there's something to be said about, you know, putting down a hammer on a situation that it doesn't really warrant a heavy hammer or a heavy hand, you know? Like,
mm-hmm.
there's other ways to do it a little bit more gently, and I'm guessing the whole Olympic movement has been tarnished by all this need to protect it, right? That it's not really that open, it's not really that welcoming, it's not really, you know what I mean? It's,
yeah.
I mean, for the weeks and the days that it actually takes place, everyone who comes feels welcomed and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But all the leading up to it, you're either in the bubble or you're outside of that bubble. And when you're outside of that bubble, it feels pretty crappy, right? So.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, we'll see. I mean, we haven't got any letters, you know, saying we can't use our name or anything. I don't think that will ever happen.
Do you have a show coming up?
We don't.
You should book a show now!
We will. We'll look into that because, you know, it's kind of weird because does it look blatant that you're trying to cash in on
yes!
media attention? Well, yeah, we'll see. I think we love performing and they happened to get a little clip of footage from when we were filmed last April at the Astoria, which is a cool venue for bands to play these days in Vancouver. It's an old hotel and they fixed up the sign. It's all nice and colorful again. So it's really cool that Hastings, East Hastings of all places, is kind of been looking a little nicer lately with the old architecture. But yeah, so we'll see if anything else comes of this. I doubt it will, but you know, it was fun to be interviewed in our little home here with our dog, and it was a cool experience.
Cool.
Yeah. So we really enjoyed that.
Did you get any feedback? Did anyone see it and email you or
yeah,
Facebook you and something?
Yes, yeah. Yes. A friend of mine did. He did. He said, "Hey, I just saw you on the on news, you know." And it was one of those pieces where they play just for sports, you know, near the end of the news hour. It was fun. Kind of pieces, lighter, and I said, "Oh yeah, cool. What'd you think?" You know, and he said he thought it looked pretty good, so that was good. And but I hadn't even seen it because I don't have a TV, and or cable for that matter. So we got a clip of it that we're gonna post to our MySpace.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you post it on your MySpace. We'll link it from this site, and then everyone will get to see it.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Let's do that. Meanwhile, in politics.
Well, it was pretty interesting because I'm assuming when you say politics, you mean vice presidential debate. And go ahead, you're going to say something.
No, I was going to say, I just want you to know that I love John McCain. No, I'm just joking. I was doing my Biden impression.
That Biden impression on Saturday Night Live on Saturday was so brilliant. It was like, the guy's a maniac. He's crazy. I'll take a bullet for him.
Yeah, any day.
He's a great, great friend.
She's
but
like,
a mortal enemy.
You know, that maverick John McCain and I, you know, we're taking shots from all sides, and we're going to do mavericky things for all those soccer moms and Joe Sixpacks out there, and I'm just like, oh my God. She actually held her own.
You know,
so-called held her own.
Well, it was interesting because when I watched the debate, before the debate, I kept thinking, okay, what it will really depend on is how the moderator does. Like, if the moderator actually presses for answers, then it's going to be a fun show.
Mm-hmm.
But she didn't press for answers. And I forget, too, that's probably her job, is to be a moderator. This is not an interview. This is a moderation, right? And it should be Joe Biden's job to press her. But he didn't press her as much as he probably could have. I think he was afraid
to be... He took the high road.
He was a bit afraid to be a bit of a pit bull about it, right? Yeah. Because he doesn't want to bully her. He could have totally been that way. But I was in Calgary at the time, and I was in meetings, and the people I was in meetings with were all very highly engaged political people. Or, no, I mean, not engaged in politics, but very just interested in politics. They all work in, you know, nonprofit organizations, and they all think about these kind of things. And so, usually we have 2 days of meetings, and usually in between the 2 days of meetings, which is usually Thursday night, we all go out to dinner as a board of directors, and we, you know, get to talk and chat, you know, have a good conversation, you know, it's all good team building in this sense. But no one wanted to go out for dinner because everyone wanted to watch these debates.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So we all, instead of going out to the milestones,
I've seen that one.
Well, we were at the Delta Calgary South, which is like in the middle of nowhere. There's a Walmart across the street, a Canadian Tire, a Pet Cetera. You know, like like it's in the middle of nowhere. And so we just ate at the hotel and the restaurant. I had a big baseball cut steak. Very nice. I ate so much red meat because I was in Alberta, right?
Yeah.
And so we go into one of our staff people had upgraded a room into like the suite with like...
Wow.
In this room had a dining room table and 4 chairs, a couch and a living room and a bedroom with another television, like separate, right? So she had 2 TVs. So 1 TV had the Canadian federal election debate, the English one.
Yeah.
And then the other TV had the Biden Palin. And I had never watched a debate with so many engaged people just staring. It was really fun, actually. It was a lot of fun to watch. And,
cool.
And actually, the U.S. one finished a bit early, so it got the last half hour of the Canadian one. And Elizabeth May actually didn't do that bad. I thought she was actually fairly good.
She's good.
When she pressed Stephen Harper, who's our prime minister, on the Atlantic Accord stuff, which I thought was kind of interesting about backing down on an agreement to sort of revenue share with the Atlantic provinces. And Elizabeth May, for those of you who don't know, is the leader of the Green Party of Canada, which fairly small, fairly tiny, but was allowed to get onto the debates, which we talked about, I think, in the last podcast about that.
Yeah.
So, but anyways, the Palin-Biden one, like, when I watch Saturday Night Live on Saturday, what I love about the Saturday Night Live spoofs right after these kind of things happen with Palin, it's so funny because it's pretty much accurate, you know? Like, it's not terribly...
It's not off the mark.
It's not off the mark. And the whole, Joe Biden sort of being... He trying to straddle both ways of loving John McCain but hating him at the same time was hilarious. And Tina Fey saying Maverick about a million times. Like, the answer to everything is Maverick, which is exactly what Palin did in her thing. And how she wouldn't answer the question at all. And she really even said to the moderator, you know, I'm not going to answer that question. I'm going to answer this question instead. I'm going to talk about the economy instead. I'm going to talk about something else, you know? It was quite amazing. Like,
I want to talk about taxes.
And, like, her answer to taxes, Maverick. What's her answer to the lack of regulation in the U.S. financial system? Maverick. Like, it's hilarious. I can't believe... I really doubt that Maverick is the answer to just about everything in the world.
It's like watching infants. You know, you're watching this and you're like, oh, come on, like... Out of all the people who work in politics or strive to be leaders, you know, in the political arena, this is where we're at, this day and age, you know? Like, this, I mean, this is who we have to choose from. It just seems unbelievable, like, that whole party doesn't have someone else that they could find as someone that is ready to take this on. Like, they did take it easy on her. it's obvious, right? Yeah. Like, they could have, like, completely tore her apart, and they didn't. And it's probably, you know, kind of a good thing, because it would have looked like a, you know, like a total gang up, maybe.
See, but what I don't mind, like, I don't think you should totally gang up, and, like, if you watch a Canadian debate, that's all it was, everyone ganging up.
I was kind of surprised. Right?
but I think with the, I don't know, it's harder, but it's different with the Canadian debate, the Canadian election, but for Palin Biden, what I wanted to see, which, you know, is a substance, and I think if you got into substance, then Palin would have made a fool of herself. She probably would have, right? Because she would have said that. But they never drilled down at all. Like, she talked about, like, you only have a couple minutes per topic, and then suddenly you switch to a different topic, and I'm like, no, like, not 5 minutes, 10, 15 minutes, let's talk about something.
It
never happens, in none, the vice presidential or the presidential.
Well, I found, though, in the Obama-McCain one, he did bring it back. He would say, you guys didn't answer the question. Let's talk about, I'm going to bring this up again. And they did that, like, 2 or 3 times about the, you know, financial fallout that we're all hearing about every day. But you're totally right. Like, they just didn't really know how they were going to go about it. Because it's amazing how one interview can really pave the way for what the next event is, which was that debate.
Yes.
That one interview with Katie Couric blew people's minds.
Yeah, and that was a good, like, that, and that,
that
was,
had to happen.
Yeah.
Do you know that she's come out since and said that she thinks that Couric was not asking fair questions? Like, can you believe that? Like, she's actually coming out and saying, she shouldn't have asked me stuff like that. It's like, okay, well, so what are we supposed to ask you, you know? I mean, it's unreal. Like, I'm shocked by the events of late.
I applaud, like, that. And that interview was actually, I mean, it wasn't tough. I mean, it wasn't, Katie Couric wasn't a brilliant interviewer. She was just doing her job. I mean, it wasn't, you know, like, it wasn't crazy questions. Like,
no.
It wasn't gotcha questions. It was like, if you or I were interviewing Sarah Palin, the kind of questions you would ask without any research, right? Like, you know what I mean? There was some research, but still, she suddenly brought up, well, do you remember what you did August 12th, 1992?
Yeah. Right.
You know, like, there wasn't anything like that, right?
Well, CNN made a good point, which, a commentator on CNN, which, I can't remember who it was, but they said, you know, it just, what was my point about that? When Couric asked her about the Supreme Court judges' decisions.
Right.
Name an example of a judgment that you didn't agree with from before.
Right, yes.
She couldn't do it. And that's really shocking because there's been a lot of notable Supreme Court judgments lately, like Guantanamo closing that and so on. Yet, she couldn't think of one of those. Probably, she doesn't know about those. It's probably not that. It's just she can't think on her feet during the interview.
Right.
And they said, well, in all fairness, would you think of one? And it's like, well, we're not running for vice president.
Right.
Someone who's running for vice president should be able to think of one of those.
Well, and then you're not going out every day saying that there's activist judges on the bench. And like, you know, if you go out and say, like, we've got to fix something, you better be able to cite what it is that's the problem. Like, cite an example of where the problem exists.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's sort of like, like saying, like, I mean, it's sort of, but not exactly. Like, when they talked about the regulation, and what the other thing that Couric really got Palin on is, like, well, you know, where, you know, John McCain was, you know, chairman of the Finance Committee for years, or whatever that committee who was in charge of regulation, and for 26 years, he voted pretty much for deregulation, less regulation, less regulation.
That's right.
And as chairman, he didn't push anything in forward that would have provided more regulation or more safeguards.
Right.
And you know, they keep saying, you know, we're mavericks and we are going to have more regulation and we need to be regulated. But they can't cite anything in which you can, as an example, show that it's not just words for them, that they actually do believe in it because they've actually done stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
yeah, startling.
It's startling. Like, I don't want to badmouth people, and I don't think I wouldn't say I dislike her in a way that is, you know, visceral.
No,
or I think she's evil or anything, but I just think there's some basic things you gotta do. Like, it's sort of like a job interview. Like, if you interview
like
badly for a job interview, you typically don't get the job, you know? Like,
it's as simple as that. It really is. Exactly. I don't dislike the woman or anything. I don't have any bad feelings. But I think every American should feel some sort of resentment, though. That's something to feel resentment over. When you throw someone like that in there, someone who's just not ready, man, woman, experienced, non-experienced, I don't care. She probably does a great job at the governor of Alaska.
Well, she probably did a really great job being mayor of the 3,000 people in Wasilla.
Yeah.
Like, someone said to, I was having a conversation with someone, like, it's like, I can't remember who it was or where it was, but, I mean, Wasilla, which is where she grew up and where she was mayor, probably did a great job, but she was mayor of a very, very tiny town.
And you know your territory.
It was like, it's like saying, I was student council president, and so now I can be vice president of the United States of America. I mean, there's a little bit more, obviously, but, you know, there are high schools that are larger than 3,000 people, or whatever the population of this town is, so...
Yeah.
So it is quite interesting. Like, there's something to be said about, like as someone says, you know, I was a owner of a small little bake store, you know, like a bakery down the street. So that makes me totally prepared and the right person to be CEO of Nestle's.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, totally.
You know, like,
that's so true.
I don't think anyone would ever say that is, you could make that leap, like that logistic leap, logical leap. It just wouldn't make sense.
And it's funny because they spoke to Republicans after the debate, because they had a party in St. Louis where they held the debate for Palin. And she met all these people in this big arena, and she had another speech. And they're telling these people I think it was CNN, because I was streaming the debate on CNN. I stream both debates side by side.
No.
And Canadian and American one. And anyway, and he's like, oh, they're like, how do you think she did today? And he's like, oh, she did wonderful. She pointed out all this stuff that Biden just, you know, was so wrong on. And I'm thinking, I'm looking at him like, come on, you look like you've been around for a long time. Like, you can't honestly tell me you think that she's someone of substance. Like there was no substance in that debate whatsoever, except for when Biden, at the end, she mentioned Maverick for like one more time right before the end of the debate, and he said, okay, let's talk about this Maverick. You know, Biden was like, this Maverick didn't vote for this and this and this and this, and he lists all these things that would have helped people,
right,
in his view,
yeah,
you know, help the American people. And he voted against every single one of them. And I don't know why the Obama camp right now isn't really latching on to that, pointing out the fact that they're not, really, like, centering on how they're not different than the people in their party. Like,
right.
Like, when they talk about change, it's like, wait a second, you guys are the guys who... you guys are the guys, like, who don't like change. Like, how can the Republicans go on about change when it's them who've been behaving like they have the last 8 years? I don't know. It just makes you wonder.
Yeah, Jon Stewart talks about that quite a bit.
Oh, I saw some of his shows recently, yeah.
Yeah, like, he doesn't understand why, how can the Republicans say we're the best party to save us from
ourselves?
Yeah, it's quite... actually, watching The Daily Show and even The Colbert Report, when The Colbert Report first started, I was a little bit... I didn't warm to it, although I love Stephen Colbert and love what he was doing, but I found his interviewing with people was actually very annoying. And over time, he's become better at, like, it's actually not bad. And but it's been interesting watching them for the last couple of months, since they really solidified it was going to be McCain versus Obama, right?
Yeah.
And how there was such hope it was going to be a different kind of election, a different kind, and lo and behold, it's the same old, right?
Yeah.
The same bipartisan, you know, divide and conquer type politics. And there's a Entertainment Weekly, I think last month, they had Stephen Colbert and Jon Stewart on the cover, and they had an interview, and they talk about how they're just really disappointed. It's really sad, and they're dead inside about how disappointing that this election has become because of that very fact, right? And it's very funny because there's this whole, there's that New Yorker cartoon that was the cover of New Yorker where they have Obama and Michelle, Barack and Michelle Obama, and that, you know, that they had Jon Stewart as Barack Obama and Stephen Colbert as Michelle Obama with the big afro and the Black Panther. It was hilarious. Yeah.
That was a good one. I was amazed. Because Palin's even, she even came out with some other terrorist remark about Palin.
About Obama, someone who he used to be associated with had something to do with
some group or something.
It's
just, I mean, they're just scraping the barrel. Like, they're using, again, the politics of fear, you know?
Well, the worst is when I think we talked about this the last podcast, at least I think we did, when they had the Republican National Convention and they had all those images of 9/11. Like, it was blatantly using 9/11. Like,
It's disgusting.
I mean, as much as Palin says Maverick, people make fun of Rudy Giuliani to just say 9/11 all the time. And whenever Jon Stewart talks about that, it's really funny.
Yeah,
he goes, and I 9/11 believe in whatever 9/11. It's like it's so. And I think I've said this before. When I think about Rudy Giuliani and how someone whose ego is so huge that he has self-destructed what could have been a really profound legacy of leadership, of strength, of courage. Just gone down the tubes.
It's gross.
And it's gross. It's really sad about how one individual can just self-destruct himself like that just because... for reaching for bigger and better things for him or herself, you know, like it's pretty sad. I almost cry inside because it's so sad.
He looked like such a leader and such a unifier and a comforter that day of 9/11 because it was that and then it was Bush. You know, Bush is the guy rallying the country and he's the guy rallying Giuliani's the guy rallying New York City. For the country, you know? And you're right, like, ever since then, it's almost like he's been trying to sell something with it. Like, he's, like, trying to sell soap. You know? It's like, yet being so blatant about guarding this so-called legacy, he could have done so much with that.
But I think it's the same symptom of the United States itself and its place in the world and what has happened. When you think about it, it's almost a parallel, right? Because there's the United States had all this goodwill and just flushed it down the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's pretty sad.
It always makes me think back to the actual like decent, caring, law-abiding, non-crazy American citizens that they're looking at their own country and they're like, "What is happening to my country?" You know, like people, and then there's the more famous ones, like, you know, like Tim Robbins, for instance, like, you know, he's like, I look around and I'm like, what's happening to this country, you know, and people know who he is and he goes out and he talks to whoever about this, you know, like,
right.
Where it's the war, terrorism, like the right wing conservatives, you know, religious right or whatever.
Right.
And he's like, I just don't know what to say, you know? Like, what do you say? Like, your whole country's crumbling around you, you know? Like, now the financial thing, I mean, it's basically another depression. I mean, they're giving, like, the banks are selling homes for a dollar that have foreclosed. Like, it's, who would have thought this day and age we would see something like this, you know? It's crazy.
Yeah. Can't say it any better than that.
Yeah.
But we're at 34 minutes. We should probably wrap it up, eh?
I think so.
But the last thing I want to say is, and we won't have time to get into our story about going out and seeing the our protest concert, benefit concert.
Oh, yes.
Which was, again, a very fascinating story, which we will get to eventually, and I hope. But One of the things, though, I did want to just quickly talk about is I saw a documentary the other day. It's called Mr. President. And okay. It's a documentary. It's only an hour long. It was on Newsworld, CBC Newsworld. And it was about examining the role of the presidency of the United States in television and film.
Interesting.
And what has it done to the actual presidency of the United States and that sort of stuff. Hmm. And there's a lot of interesting things, but a lot of interesting context around sort of the Matt Santos character in The West Wing Arnold Vinnick and President Bartlett and that sort of stuff, and you know, some other president roles. And the only thing I will talk about, which I thought was really fascinating, is there's one guy, this I guess is political historian or something, talked about the movie Dave. You remember the movie Dave?
Yes,
right?
Yes. Kevin Kline.
Kevin Kline plays the President of the United States who gets I think he's a heart attack or an aneurysm or something, right? And he's like basically in a coma. And he also plays another character, which is basically the lookalike to the President of the United States, who gets thrown into being the actual President of the United States, although he's like a president impersonator by trade, and he also does like it seems like he runs a temp agency or something, I think is what it does in this movie. I love that movie. It's really good. It's really, you know, it's really funny. And,
yeah.
You know, it's one of the good ones from back then, right? And what the guy said, he said, it's actually one of the scarier, if you think about it, it's one of the scarier movies. It's telling you a very scary message or a very sad message in that, in the end, it says that the presidency, the process is so tainted, it's so poisonous, that anyone who goes through it comes out at the other end as president to be bad, evil, corrupt, and you could take the nicest guy, and go through that process, he will come out and you'll be chewed out, spit out as an evil president. And of course, this guy who doesn't go through that process suddenly gets thrown in to be president of the United States just because he happens to look like the president. He ends up becoming this hero, this the ideal president, and the only way he could be that is because he didn't go through that system.
Right.
And he said that's a really sad thing. That's a sad message. And if you think about it, that the process is so broken, that you need someone who just goes somehow gets through that gets the presidency without that process. And I thought, wow, I never thought of it that way.
It's an interesting way to see it, yeah.
And I thought, wow, is that guy thinking too much? Or is that a really good point? I haven't quite landed which way yet, but I thought that was an interesting thing to share with our podcast listeners out there.
Awesome. Well, thank you. No, that was great. And I think we will post a link for that, shall we?
Yes.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Well, shall you lead us into
Send us away?
Yes.
All right. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope you enjoyed that one. I hope we didn't get my too, negative there, as sometimes I can. But
critical. I think
critical.
Critical
yeah.
is different than negative.
You know, this is a good outlet for me to kind of try to understand things I just don't get. You know,
and that's
kind of why we
do
it, right?
That's exactly why we do it.
So thanks for riding along with us.
I'm trying to make a horse noise, but I don't know how to do that.
We will, Well, actually, here's another reminder to go out and vote if you're Canadian on October 14th.
October 14th.
We have in Quebec, we have 5 people to choose from. We have 4 for the rest of the country. I think that's more than any other Democratic state can say, probably. So I think we should be damn lucky about that. 4 to 5 different visions for the future of this country.
Are
so,
they really all that different? But anyways, just kidding.
You know what? I actually think some of them are.
Yeah?
I don't think they all are, but I think there's enough difference at least between... There's at least 3 main differences. Socialist, center, and fascist.
Oh!
I'm kidding. Well, sort of. Anyway, so we'll see you next time. Visit us at thegotmatrix.com, or you can find us on iTunes. You just search and
yes, search for us the dot matrix dot, or the dot matrix, I guess. If you
the
search.
Dot matrix, yeah.
And then if you're on Facebook, find us with where you've got a
group. Oh yeah, I almost forgot about that. Yeah, so there you have it, and take care, and I'm sure you'll be hearing us soon.
Absolutely. Okay.